Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Today's guest is a man who is going to talk about something we don't usually talk about. And his name is David Fitzgerald. He's an author now working on his third book. And the subject he is writing about and to which he's kind of devoted his life at this point, although wasn't raised in this vein, is atheism. David, I'm going to go to you right away. I don't want to waste a minute more. Would you please talk about where you were born and what your upbringing was like? And let's kind of slide into how you went into this other interest.
Sure, yeah. I never thought I was going to become an atheist. I was raised Southern Baptist in Central California. And that was my whole life at the time when I was growing up. That was
You said you were born and your parents were in college.
They went to California Baptist College down in Riverside. But we grew up
with plans to be a minister? Or just
you know, I think my dad always did want to be a minister. Mm-hmm. It just never quite clicked. Mm-hmm. And he became a teacher instead.
Oh.
And we grew up in the Central Valley in Fresno, Clovis area.
And, I love the California Central Valley.
It's a nice place to be from, I like
okay.
to say.
Well, okay.
So we grew up there, and the church was, yeah, our whole social network, our whole environment there. And I thought I would probably become a minister, too,
as really?
Well. Most people around me did, because I was so interested in...
Religion. And, or what?
Well, I guess it was because I was smart. It was obvious I was smart as a child, and that was, like, the fast track to becoming, you know... The ultimate in Southern Baptist society, and that's becoming a preacher.
Sure.
And to be fair, I was really devout all the way into college.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a funny story because what changed all that was one day I was having a theological argument with a friend of mine.
And how old were you?
I was probably about 20.
Oh, okay.
20,
I didn't know if you were 7 or something.
Oh, no,
yes.
No.
Okay.
I was always very devout all through
mm-hmm.
high school, all through elementary school. And the way I would flirt with this one particular girl is we would have theological mm-hmm. arguments with each other. And so one day we were having, you know, another typical, you know, roundabout like
mm-hmm.
that. And she goes, "Well, Dave, you know the Hindu religion is like 3,000 years older than Christianity." And I was all set to jump down her case and say, "Oh, no, it's not."
But you were surprised about that.
I was because I realized before I even got another word out of my mouth, that I had no idea whether the next thing I was going to say was true or not.
Uh-huh.
And that hit me like a bolt from the blue.
Oh, I'm so touched by that. I've got that it was truth.
Yes, absolutely.
In fact. Okay.
And all of a sudden I felt, I'm just like the Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses that I've always been railing against, you know? I was just...
Railing against what?
That they were all going to hell and we were going to heaven
because
we had the truth and they had lies.
Uh-huh. And suddenly you had a new view of what was true. Uh-huh.
Suddenly it realized I was just as bad. I did the exact same thing they did. I was just parroting what I'd been told without any
mm-hmm.
regard for whether it was true or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that realization just thunderstruck me from that instant on.
What was your first next step, you say, from that instant on?
Well, I mean, that was the end of the conversation. I was just kind of stunned at that. And my thought was, well, do you know the Talking Heads song? There's one David Byrne sings where he says, "Same as it ever was, same as it ever was.
Uh-huh.
Am I right or am I wrong?
Uh-huh.
My God, what have I done?" And it's like he was on my shoulder that whole afternoon saying that. And from that millisecond on, Christianity never felt or looked the same to me after that. It just seemed...
But why was it actually, why was it such a disappointment? You can...
Well, it was my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And I had spent my whole childhood and, young adult years
mm-hmm.
being a real strong advocate for what I saw as the truth and the Christian message and all that. And so I really put my... time into, you know, knowing the reasons for why we believe what we believe.
Okay, so I'm curious, you could still be a strong advocate for the Christian religion and Christian values and way of life and say, uh-oh, there was something that came first. It wouldn't delete that.
And see, that's a funny thing. It wasn't even about Hinduism or it wasn't about that argument at all.
Oh, it was truth.
It
okay.
was about the fact that I was not on the side of truth
okay.
in that moment.
Okay.
And it's like, well, have I ever been on the side of truth?
Mm-hmm.
And it just, from that moment on, just seemed, in hindsight, it just felt so obvious.
And so your whole devotion here
yeah.
has been searching for truth.
Absolutely.
Okay, so what did you do to move over, why move over to atheism and what was that about?
Well, you know, it's funny because it really wasn't a decision I actively made. It
uh-huh.
just, that was the only thing that fit anymore.
You started reading? You started...
Well, I'd always had. I always had, because I could tell you, you know, how Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses are all going to hell. You know, even now, today, I could do that. And I studied a lot about different religions and why they were all wrong, you know, and why, you know, Christianity was true. And but I realized I had done a lot more studying on why all these other things are wrong rather than how we know Christianity is true.
Okay.
So that came later for me, that bit. But it was an instant epiphany.
So how did you start? I mean, I know that it takes an enormous amount of research for what you write.
That's true.
How did you get to your first book or your first public declaration? Or how did you start relating to people with this?
As an atheist, you mean?
Mm-hmm. And at what point did you call yourself that?
Yeah, that was interesting. For the first year or so, I didn't know what to call myself. I didn't know what I was doing. And I had this feeling like I had been flying in an airplane at 10,000 feet and the bottom had dropped out. And yet somehow I wasn't falling. I was still going on just fine. And getting over that feeling of that magic shield of protection I'd get from heaven, you know, protecting me and watching out for harm, that took about a year to get used to that. It was just a very vulnerable feeling. But at the same time, the wonderful thing about that was I suddenly felt so much more connected to everybody on the planet. Mm. When I was a Christian, I was one of those judgmental types that would like look at everybody, and it was like Arnold Schwarzenegger in The Terminator, like, oh, he's saved, he's going to hell, she saved, she's going to hell, you know, and just compartmentalizing everybody I met.
Uh-huh.
And the way I would interact with them was all determined on whether I thought they were believing the right things and going to the right church and doing the right things.
But you refer to yourself, you refer to when I was a Christian.
Right.
So you no longer see yourself as a Christian.
I don't. And the ironic thing about
why can't you be a Christian who doesn't believe there's a God?
Well,
Jews can do that.
That's true. And yeah, and they do. I just don't. I was the sort of Christian that if it wasn't true, I didn't want to be it.
Okay.
And I think you can be an even better Christian as an atheist. Because
Well, there you go.
You don't have to throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Well, that was kind of my point.
Exactly.
So it doesn't make you not a Christian.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it doesn't.
I mean,
doesn't,
by your choice, it doesn't.
You know,
yes. Okay.
I mean, it all. I mean, I take your point, but it all depends how, you know, if Christians' ethics are
based on.
I mean, in that way, I still have a Christ-like sense of love for all people, even more so now.
There you go.
But at the same time, there's lots of things Christianity just gets wrong.
Okay, you
got slavery wrong. Got homosexuality wrong.
Can we talk about some of those things?
Sure.
You start. You go first.
Well, yeah. I mean,
you go only.
When I was younger, you know, I was very adamantly anti-gay because that's what our church was. That we were raised to be that. I didn't know any gay people. When I got out there and started meeting gay and lesbian people and realizing these are really sweet people, these are really nice, and some of them would actually go to the gay church,
mm-hmm.
and I went with two girlfriends of mine.
What's the gay church?
It's Metropolitan Community Church, MCC.
Where's that?
It's all over the place. It's just a denomination that is very gay inclusive.
I see, okay.
I went there, and the one thing, I was still a Christian when I went there, and I just couldn't get past the fact that I knew the Bible said very strongly condemned homosexuality. There's just no two ways about
it. For men.
Well, that's true. Good point.
There's no injunction against it for women.
And, yeah, bless their hearts. That's very true. And it's just that kind of thing. All these attitudes you get from these Bronze Age documents that mm-hmm. just don't apply to us anymore. And nor should they. You know, it's a good thing they don't. It's little things like that just sort of built up. And when I finally made the break, it just... You know, it wasn't like I bent a bit. I was like a mighty oak, and then boom, hit by thunder, and it was gone.
Yeah.
In fact, of all my friends, I don't know anybody who had such a dramatic switch, just so instantaneous from A to B, mm-hmm. boom, with no middle ground in between.
And why did you want to bring this to people? Because you're
well, it's funny.
You're busy with that.
I am busy with that.
So, what is it you want people to? I mean, you are a preacher in a way.
I mean, it's funny. I'm just as evangelical as I ever was when I was a Christian.
Right.
Sure, just in the opposite direction. And I think that's part of it. Is I want to be a good ambassador for faith. Because there's so many people who, when I told them I was an atheist, they said, oh, but you're so happy. And
so that's
like
the point. Let's talk about that for a minute. Because I think the general perception of atheism is very cranky, angry group who is... You know, the front cover of Time magazine with God is dead.
Exactly. And we're all, you know, chain smoking in a Paris cafe and wearing black berets.
Yes.
Like, existence, it's absurd, huh? You know?
Right.
And to be fair, I mean, that's a valid stereotype because there are people like that who are really cranky and pissed off at Christianity. And I don't blame them,
yes.
Honestly. I stopped trying to tell people how to be an atheist a long time ago because we need firebrands. We need diplomats. We need both, you know. It's like the civil rights movement. They needed Malcolm X and Martin Luther King.
Yes.
And it's the same applies to us.
So your goal really is to get people to open their eyes and not fall into
absolutely.
The pit you were in by seeing only
absolutely.
One view and maybe being...
Absolutely.
God help you.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. It's funny because I work with a lot of Christian groups now.
Doing what?
Well, they come up into the Bay Area. They're teaching students to like be apologetic, to work on their arguments for Christianity.
And, what does that mean?
Well, how to defend their faith, basically,
uh-huh.
against charges of atheism. And I've been doing that for about 8 or 9 years now
and
with
so
these different
groups.
What
do you do with that?
It's a fantastic thing for me.
I mean,
they just let me come and talk to them and tell them where I'm coming from.
Well, that's an interesting concept. Defending your faith against
yes.
charges of atheism.
Well, not charges, but the arguments they get from the outside world, you know.
Oh, I see that they should be atheists, that atheism makes more
there
sense.
There you go. There
and
you
so
go.
What are they taught to say?
I don't really know what they're taught to say. I just know they bring me in there so I can interact with them and they can have a go at, you know, at the very least so they can see where I'm coming from. And that's why I do it.
I see. Okay.
Because the one thing I do love about that group is they say, if Christianity is true, it should make sense. It should be reasonable. And the fact that they're willing to put their money where their mouth is makes me very happy to talk to them.
Do you think that religions will start to work toward being reasonable and deleting the things that don't make sense?
I think that there's an eroding process that's definitely been happening, even more so in the last 10 or 12 years. Since the internet came aboard, that's really accelerated that. It used to be colleges and universities would be founded as religious bastions. But then as the scholars exchange information, it would just automatically erode their fundamentalism. And even in colleges that were set up to be a response to secular colleges became just as liberal and secular as the other ones. And that's still happening even today.
I saw a documentary once on a Bible college. I mean, these kids, and I forget where it was, and it was so touching because these children really were encouraged, and I think they even put it, to look, climb up, and see what's on the other side of the hill.
See, that's brilliant.
And
they
come home. Oh, it was so moving. And they would come home, these college-age students, and they would be in a dialogue with their parents about what they didn't believe. And
yeah, and I think that's brilliant. And it's a needed thing. I don't try to, like, convert Christians to atheism, per se. I just wanted them to know where I'm coming from, that I respect their beliefs enough to question it and poke at it and kick the tires around. And if they become a better thinking Christian, my job's done. That makes it.
By the way, I was just going to ask that.
Yeah.
Yes, because if you look at yourself with awareness,
right,
in any aspect of your life, you can be a stronger that whatever it is.
Exactly.
It seems to me.
Yeah, I think so too.
So you're not out to convert. Bring awareness.
Exactly.
And say yes.
Exactly. And don't get me wrong. I mean, I am a big old atheist, and I would love everybody to just. All the religions out there to stop being silly and grow up. But,
stop being silly and stop being religions? Or
well, yeah.
Okay, no, I'm asking.
Yeah, because, and again, it's one of those throwing out the baby with the bathwater.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest problem with Christianity isn't that it's good or bad, because my favorite quote is, religion makes good people better and bad people worse.
Yes, that was just going to... Uh-huh, when people use it as the ammo.
Exactly.
Right.
And the problem is you can't defeat the evil religious people without stepping on the toes of the good religious people.
So
and that's a problem. But here's the thing.
Yes.
The upshot of all that is, whether it's good or bad, is it true or not? That's the real question.
Okay, you keep coming back to that.
Yeah.
That's admirable. And tell me about your first book and some of the things you've discovered, because I know one of the things you talk about is that there was no Jesus Christ.
Right, and that's a hard sell even for a lot of atheists. But what happened
to me...
Because
how do you know?
Well, these are great questions. Let me tell you. I first started getting interest in the subject about around the year 2000 or so, when I first started being curious about what Jesus really said and really did, and how much was just legendary baloney that had been added on later. And that was where I got in trouble, because it never even crossed my mind that there might not be a Jesus. It's just like, how would that even, you know, that wasn't even an option. But once I started looking into what our evidence is for Jesus, what our sources are for Jesus, and how they're not the way they've always been traditionally depicted, you know, at least when I was going to church, it started just raising all these red flags left and right. And long story short, about 2 years later, I was thinking, wow, I'm not the only one saying this out there. There's people who have been saying that there is no Jesus. And they've been saying that like since the second century and third century, that people have been questioning all this.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I know that late at night, very, you know, 2 in the morning, some of the programs in LA have been priests who were saying there was no Jesus.
Wow.
My mother was telling me about that, that she saw that in the middle of the night one night when she was a little insomniac.
Yeah.
So how...
You know, it's funny you say that. There's actually a group now called the Clergy Project that's just for clergy, Protestant, Catholic, even imams and rabbis who have lost their faith but don't know what to do about it and don't have anyone to talk to about it.
Uh-huh.
And there's hundreds in that group. And some of what they call – it's a very anonymous group, you know, so they don't have to – you know, come out of the closet until they're ready. But some of them have what they call graduated and come forward.
Who's on TV at 2 in the morning.
Yeah, probably so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So can you not have a viable religious group, Christian, even if it came out and there were just incontrovertible proof somehow
right.
that there were none, you could still have a religious group who believes in the teachings that were somehow passed down.
Well, you could.
No?
You could. Well, here's my thing. It's like, when I see those teachings get passed down, some of them are great, and they would be great whether you were a Christian or not.
Right.
They work for everybody. Some of them are just plain wrong. And it's like, why are we putting them up on a pedestal? You know, why can't women speak in church? You know, why are gay people to be stoned to death? And why was slavery ever considered a good idea or acceptable idea or beating slaves to death, you know? All those things Christianity has gotten wrong, you know, and to be fair, Western civilization got them wrong, but we got better and we've got – the more humanist, the more secular we become, the better our quality of life is. And you look at the least religious countries on the planet like Scandinavia and, you know, they have the highest standard of living on the planet. And conversely, the most religious are the most miserable, you know.
Isn't that an interesting concept?
Isn't it, though?
Why do you think, I don't know about Scandinavia and the highest standard of living and what that means.
Well, it's up there.
That's
going to be
complicated.
Sure.
But the religious being miserable, what evidence is there of that? I mean, there must be.
Well, you take the results, and mostly I'm talking about Islamic countries in the Middle East and you know, places like Afghanistan and Pakistan, where... or in Africa where it's either tribal shamanistic sort of animism or it's fundamentalist Christianity missionary work. But where they still believe in witchcraft and people are still, you know, going out and burning each other because they think, you know, somebody put a hex on them or something like that. They're just horror stories coming out of countries like that. And the only commonality they have isn't even the same religion, but it's that they're steeped in religion and superstition.
Okay, so you're kind of equating those two for this. Okay.
Yeah.
What kind of things did you discover when you started to research for your first book that does have kind of a title that's a little bit...
it's a little provocative.
Yes. I was going to say combative, but provocative is better because it's not necessarily combative.
Yeah, and it's not meant to be. And honestly, it's not written for Christians anyway. I don't have any illusions that...
And the title of the book is...
And the title of the book is Nailed... 10 Christian Myths That Show Jesus Never Existed at All.
So do you want to talk about those? What are they?
Well, let's do. And I want to start out by saying that's not hyperbole at all. I really don't think there was even a guy named Jesus.
Okay.
I originally started with a top 12 list of that. And the top 10, the biggest reasons are, first of all, the way it's been presented that the idea is ridiculous, it's not ridiculous. And people have been saying this for a long time. Some of the standard, the traditional official party line of Christianity has these depictions of early Christianity of being starting with Jesus and his 12 apostles, and that it all started and they were all one big happy family and all on the same team and it all spread out from there. And that picture just doesn't hold up at all. We see, instead of seeing Christianity just, you know, snowballing down the hill of Golgotha and spreading everywhere, it appears in random places all scattered throughout the Roman Empire in these tiny little feuding house churches that can't agree about the first thing about Jesus, about who he was, who his apostles were, things like that. And basically, the whole thing boiled down to me to this one paradox, that either Jesus was this amazing teacher or preacher who, if not did amazing miracles, said amazing new teachings and things like that, and yet no one noticed outside his little cult for over 100 years, mm-hmm. or he didn't do any of those things, and he was just one more random preacher in Galilee and Judea, and yet as soon as he's died, you've got all these feuding little cultlets scattered everywhere, hither and yon, that can't agree about the first thing of his life. And to me, that fact alone is a huge red flag to me that this is a guy being made up. And another big clue for me is when you look at Christianity before the Gospels were written, before the four Gospels of the New Testament were written, Christians talk about Jesus in a very different way. Paul, and not just Paul, but everybody in his first generation of Christianity, talks about Jesus with almost no reference to anything he did on earth, but it's all, he was there at the beginning of creation, and he went through from the underworld to all through the heavens, layers of heavens, and he does this and does that, but nothing about, and he lived on earth just a few years ago, and yet when, once the Gospels are written, that completely changes, and when you hear pastors and preachers and missionaries talking about Jesus, they start with, he was on earth, he did this, he said this, da, 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 and now he's on heaven. And it's just this complete reversal of what we originally got. And the deeper we go into early Christian history, the more variegated it is, the more diverse it is, and the less they agree with each other, and the more nebulous and vague and mythological he becomes.
Now, how was the book received?
It came out in 2010, and it was voted one of the top 5 atheist agnostic books of the year. And
so there's
it's
a whole genre
selling.
Of atheist agnostic
there is,
books?
There is. Uh-huh. That's come into its own ever since Dawkins and Daniel Dennett and Sam Harris wrote their books and Christopher Hitchens. It never hasn't been a thing, but I think right. now more than ever, mm-hmm. it's becoming more popular too.
And with the internet, people are able to
For
reach
sure.
each other and find people
For
of
sure.
like mind.
Yeah.
What do you think would the world be like without any religion? Now, you're saying quality of life would improve, but it's not that simple.
And of course, it's not that simple, sure. The one thing I
because
do know...
Because there are monsters who may be kept
absolutely.
In check
absolutely.
By believing...
And maybe.
I said might be.
Yeah.
Right.
It seems the other way around when I look at it. But like I said, religion seems to make good people better and bad people worse. It's an intensifier.
Yeah.
So a world without religion would just mean you wouldn't have that particular intensifier. You'd probably get some other kind of thing. Because
okay.
atheists can disagree with each other just as vociferously
really?
As anything, you know,
sure.
almost.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So if you didn't have it, I mean, fat chance, as they say, because people seem to need it, and it seems to serve some really
And it,
valuable...
we definitely know it serves purposes, and
right.
it's co-opted a lot of evolutionary strategies.
But the people who want to conquer and batter and kill in the name of, I mean, it's been so handy to have religion.
It is that.
What would they be killing in the name of?
I wonder. I mean, there was a South Park episode that made fun of that.
It said, oh, I don't
in,
know it.
In the 500 years in the future, they go there, and it's nothing but different atheist groups all killing each other. And when they're in battle, they're saying, oh, my science, and oh, and they die, and things like that.
Yeah.
And part of why I find that so funny is you don't see atheists killing each other, and you don't see scientists killing, you see them disagreeing, you see them having
yes.
vicious disagreements.
And there's still arrogance within it.
And absolutely. Yeah. All the yeah. all the same human shortcomings.
Because the science community knows it's right.
Well, it knows it's human. It knows it's human. And it knows it's capable of being wrong. It knows it has good reasons
many
for
do.
The things
yes.
that it's provisionally mm-hmm. accepting as true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not even that it knows it's right. It just, it has good reasons for what it thinks at any given time. Yeah, and it's willing to change its mind if evidence comes
oh, that,
up, and that's
that
a huge
nice.
Part too.
Yes, that is a huge
yeah.
thing. So if evidence came up,
yeah.
if there were some Dead Sea Scrolls found that showed that, yes, indeed, he did exist, and he did this and that and the other, and yes, it's been, what's the word, not fictionalized, but legendized.
Yes, yes.
To make points stronger, would you be disappointed?
I don't know if I'd be surprised.
Yes,
in fact, the last chapter of my book in Nailed
oh.
is called Can Jesus Be Saved?
Ah.
And I just go down and I list all the ways that the New Testament and early Christian history would be different, even if there was just a regular guy
mm-hmm.
named Jesus,
mm-hmm.
period.
So this is worth reading for everybody. This
I think
is
so.
Not, yes.
I mean, I'm just saying, I
yes,
think so.
As the author.
Yeah.
Let me ask you something.
Sure.
Connected with, well, I don't like to be the love letter police, but your family was supportive when the book came out.
Well, that's half true. My folks were a little freaked out by it.
Oh, they were.
But
by the fact that the book came out and their name was now out in public.
No, nothing like that. It was just that. I mean, they're still Southern Baptists. You know, my grandparents were Southern Baptists, and it's hard for them, for us, not to have this thing in common anymore.
I see.
My brothers and sisters, they are delighted with me. You know, and I'm really. You know, that really pleases me a lot.
Do your parents feel that way, or do parents feel that way because they think you'll be safer? Do they worry for your safety somehow, spiritual safety?
Yes, I think so. Yes, spiritual safety, absolutely. Uh-huh. Absolutely. And I think it's just a sad because there's a distance between us that we didn't have when we were all on the same team.
So who would you write a love letter to right now? Of course, I've got one in mind.
I've got a few in mind. I mean,
what are yours?
I would love to... I feel like my parents... Even though we're on this gulf, we still have that love, and I still feel it.
That would be my vote for a love
letter. Yeah, and I take your point there. But I think what I'd like to do is send out a love letter to everybody who ever felt like I did, that they were the only one out there who felt this way and weren't connected to any other atheists and had no one to talk to.
And what would you say?
I would say you're not alone, and you are far from... the only one who thinks this way and feels this way.
Now, I always think a love letter should be filled with specifics. So do you want to give them credit for, I mean, you said about yourself, you were smart. Yeah. You want to give them credit for anything?
It's not even about being smart, but it's about having the courage to look at
something about
with
them.
Your eyes open.
Right.
And the fact that you were able to take a hard look at what you believe and what you taught and what everyone else around you seems to believe. And question it. That takes a lot of courage. And I think the best way to be happy is to be totally honest with yourself that way.
Okay, so you would start this letter, dear. I mean, I'm talking a real letter here.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Dear my friend out there, I may not know your name.
Lovely. It doesn't matter. I was just curious how you would get into an actual letter, because for me, these things aren't philosophical exercises.
I see.
They are put it in the mailbox.
Whoa.
Right. Whoa. And that's the next step. To whom would you send this? You can't write to everybody. You don't know who they
are. Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Go ahead.
I'll put it on my Facebook page.
Well, okay. That's good, because that is the way we communicate. But as far as a real love letter, it should be something that has felt the touch of your hand. So I think...
Talk to me.
Mail it to you.
Interesting.
Keep it in the envelope. Mm-hmm. I mean, open it and read it, because you're going to find that the person who wrote it is different
than the person who reads it.
That.
Interesting.
And even if it's you and you,
but
keep it. Just write a full love letter to all those people. And since I don't know all your addresses, I'm mailing it to me. I'll keep it for you. And put it in whatever you want to, and let somebody find it in 2 generations from now. Because you are a part of some kind of thought history, for sure. And wouldn't that be just a pot of gold to find that?
That would be awesome.
Evidence that you, in fact, were here.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Okay. Would you do that? I mean,
I will do that.
You're a writer anyway.
I am a writer anyway. It's what I do.
And this is part of, you know, the thing about, and handwriting, in your handwriting. Oh, did I say?
Oh, you didn't, but I will.
Okay. Because when you find things in history, even, by the way, from biblical times... And it's, you know, in the scribe's own handwriting. And it's those things we have in handwriting, like the Rosetta Stone and that count.
Yeah.
That felt the touch of a human hand.
I love that.
And nobody has your handwriting, and everybody has whatever font Facebook has.
Thank you
for doing this.
Oh, thanks.
Will you come back and talk about your other books?
I would love that so much.
Because this is a complicated issue.
It is. And there's
really intriguing. I just never... thought. I mean, you are such a giving, emotionally generous, warm, loving man.
It's like I'm looking in a mirror.
Well, thank you. But, I mean, you do have that quality, and I don't know that we associate that with the grumbling atheist. So thank you very much, and please remember, we're going to say goodbye for now from Janet Gallen and...
David Fitzgerald.
Yes, thank you. And I want you to remember, as I always want people to remember, if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is that special occasion. See ya.